Here we are on February the 3rd, 1998. What a long journey we've traveled in this television business, and I would never have dreamed that I would ever be this old or that we would ever have been a part of anything as wonderful as Channel 7, Channel 8, and Channel 9. A lot of people don't understand how television came on the scene, but since we were there, I'll attempt to give you an idea. Of course, the FCC, before World War II, had what they call an allocation table for television. And before World War II, no one had ever seen any television to mount anything. No one knew what it looked like, had no idea how it really worked. And we didn't have much more, having been in the broadcast business, the radio business, we had a little bit better knowledge than the average person. But at the time war started, the FCC in Washington froze all the applications and all of the channel tables, and everything was devoted to the World War II effort, to winning the war. And of course, a great deal of interest continued to be in the upcoming great invention of television. And people had their own ideas of what it would be like and what it would do and so forth. And when the war was over and the lid blew off of the can and everybody started getting out trying to find out what television would be, how it would work, what it would do for the country, what it could do for the people. And at that time, we had, of course, thought about it during the war and had come up with the idea that we just had to be in the television business. We're going to stay in the radio. We had to be in television. So it fell on my part to, at the ending of the war, to be the one to sort of try and guide our family into the television business. By that, I mean we had to see what markets we were going to operate in, and nobody had made any applications for any markets. We had them ready to make, and there had been some sent in, but they were all frozen. So we, after considerable study and looking at the markets, and of course we had an advantage over most other people in that we had operated a grocery business within all of these markets and was very well acquainted with the markets, with the statistics of the people and all about it. So we decided, well, we're gonna go after this station, and I'm a sort of a country hick in most ways, but I was pretty good one gallist engineer, and I thought that channel 7, 8, 9 would be the best frequencies to go after, and the reason were several for that reason, but we were in sort of in the middle of the dial, and that is always a good place to be. And there were other interferences that would come into play in some of the very early channels or in the very low channels. So we concluded that we would go after channel 8, and at that time, the first allocation table before the war put Channel 8 in Tulsa. So we decided we'd go after that. And that's what we did. We formed an application, filed it with the FCC and after the war and waited, begin our long journey of getting it through the FCC and ready to where we could start building somewhere on down the line. And the cost of television, we knew was going to be horrendous. We didn't know how in the world we'll ever figure that out. Borrowing money in banks was a very difficult thing because of the unknown qualities of television and the expenses of it, and how it's ever going to operate and where it's going to go. It was a tremendous undertaking on our part. And we finally got together with an engineer by the name of Paul Godley, who lived in West Montclair, New Jersey, but operated worked for the FCC. And we made the application and had a lawyer in Washington. Mr. Griffin had radio lawyers up there. Spearman, Sykes, and Robinson, and so the application was filed, and we waited to see what we were going to do with it. And in the meantime, John Griffin and I had studied the markets, grocery markets, and all very thoroughly, and we came up with the idea that, well, if we're going to go after one station, maybe we should go after another. So we looked around about what stations we ought to go after, and since we were on KOMA in Oklahoma City, we decided that Channel 9 would probably be a good frequency, so we worked up an application for Channel 9 for Oklahoma City, finally got it filed, and a few weeks after the one with Channel 8, and then after it got in the mill and starts to grind through the FCC, we got to looking around and say, well, now maybe we ought to make an application for a little further away from Channel 8 than Oklahoma City. And we thought, well, it would be nice to have them right close together. And everybody said, but then when you look at the requirements, they have to be located so many miles apart. I've forgotten what, 25, well, maybe more than that, maybe 50 or 60 or 70 miles apart. And of course, in our looking at Channel 9, it was like Channel 8, pretty much free from interference, and looked like it might be a good idea. And then we came up, there was a rule with the FCC that you couldn't put Channel 8 and Channel 9 together. They had to be certainly on no short spacing, but the more we looked at it, the more we studied the frequencies, we realized that Channel 9 and Channel 8 would not interfere in the major markets, in the markets of Tulsa and Oklahoma City, because a strange phenomena developed in Channel 8 and Channel 9, in that Channel 9 would not go into the Tulsa market as long as the signal was stronger than the signal coming out of Tulsa market. In other words, it neutralized itself just about 50% of the distance from the two towers. And we studied that out with our chief engineer and everybody, and we came to the conclusion that there would be no interference from these stations being so close together. Based upon that rule, we asked for a waiver to that the FCC not consider the spacing as normal, and to give us short space in the distance it would be between the two transmitters. And we made the application on that basis, and of course the application was attacked by everybody as being a short space, but we were able to argue it around, and the FCC engineers agreed with us, and that gave us the freedom to go to work and work on Channel 9 for Oklahoma City. And at that time, some few years before that, we had bought a radio station, an FM station here in Oklahoma by Mr. Bonebreak. He had a radio station, been a very successful radio operator, and he'd bought about 80 acres out here on North Kelly for replacement of his tower, and had built a 985-foot tower and had his FM station going very soon after the war ended, and had found out that that it was working fine, that FM did good, but when you looked at it, there were no receivers that were tuned to FM at all. You couldn't hardly find a radio receiver, so Mr. Bonebreak operated for a short time and decided he wanted to get out of the FM business. So John and I bought the property with the idea of moving KOMA from the Biltmore Hotel, where it had been built back in the, when long ago, I don't know how far back we'd been on top of the Biltmore Hotel. But anyway, we decided to move KOMA from the Biltmore Hotel out to North Kelly to use this tall tower we thought that would be big enough and good enough if we ever got in the television business for at least a startup television operation. We went ahead and made the application to move KOMA radio out there and changed our application on television to use that as the basis of our location. And of course, we started scrapping it all through the FCC, and we had all kinds of opposition. Then we had several other, KY was already on the air. They'd been on the air before the war, and primarily, I think, as an experimental station, they had worked with it